Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power, but today it's going to be food power. Why? Because what we do for ourselves physically really does make a difference. What we put into our bodies enables our bodies to function well. One of the biggest challenges that seems to be facing a major portion of population today is a condition called diabetes. Now, I know you've heard about this. Well, we have got an option that I think you will really enjoy knowing about, and it was put together. This book is called The Healthy Calendar Diabetic Cookbook, Diabetic Cooking. Laura Rondinelli Hamilton and Chef Jennifer Bucko Lampau put this together. And when putting this together, they combined their expertise. And interestingly enough, this is food that just about anybody will enjoy. But more importantly, for those people in your family that are diabetic, even hypoglycemic, this can really be a major difference in their lives. And we'll find out why, because Laura Rondinelli Hamilton is the lady that is with us today. Hi, Laura.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm doing wonderfully. This book is extremely impressive, and I know that it's been endorsed by the American Diabetes Association, but I thought your information about yourself was really quite interesting. We all are aware of the fact that good food contributes to healthy well-being, but when you first put this edition together for Healthy Calendar Diabetic Cooking in 2004, you said so much has changed. What has changed, Laura? What do you think is the most significant change since you first put out a cookbook for those that want to eat better?
You know, since 2004, there's just been more of a push for whole grains and against products made with white flour. So that was probably the biggest change that we were able to put in the book, is that now there was a lot more products available to us, so we could really have better choices. Things like lower carb tortillas, more whole grain bread options, whole grain pastas. So we could make a lot more recipes with those foods and lower carb options that actually taste good. So those are some of the changes that we put in the cookbook since 2004. And I think they made wonderful additions to the recipes.
I want to ask you a question. Why do you think that the low-carb patterning is so significant? What is the reasoning behind this? When you think about the American dietary parameters that are so often promoted, they've really changed dramatically.
Yeah, and the American diet really is high in high carbs, but very unhealthy processed carbs. So the lower carb options that are available now that we are recommending are the healthier carbs. And I think that's the big thing, because the reason why we're talking about that in relation to diabetes is that carbohydrates break down into sugar and raise blood sugars. So we know people with diabetes can't be eating extremely high-carb diets, and that when they do eat carbohydrates, they should be eating the healthiest type, the most natural types of carbohydrates. So whole grains would count for that, fresh fruit, milk, yogurt. Those are healthy carbs versus, you know, a lot of the processed carbs like chips and cookies and snacks that you see at the grocery stores.
You yourself found that diet really made, I mean, you had to change your dietary patterns, and this occurred in February of 2007. What happened to you?
Well, it was interesting because I was a dietitian, been practicing for many years, and we were working on our second cookbook, which is called the Healthy Carb Diabetes Cookbook. And while we were developing those recipes, I just started getting very sick, and those recipes used a lot of whole wheat flour, a lot of healthy, you know, healthy ingredients, but I was just getting sick and knew something was wrong, and I wasn't tolerating a lot of food, and at that time I got diagnosed with celiac disease, and so definitely had to dramatically change my diet to a gluten-free diet and eliminate a lot of those foods, including flour. So gluten is found in flour, oats, rye, and barley. So that encompasses a lot of foods like regular breads, a lot of regular cereals, but it's also a hidden ingredient in things like soy sauces and salad dressing. Some meats can have gluten. So yeah, it was a big diet change. Even though I was a dietitian, it took some educating for me even.
Now, tell us how celiac is diagnosed, if you don't mind, so that those
Sure.
that are listening can be aware of this, because this definitely was a dietary patterning. You are not, you know, 150 years old. Obviously,
No.
you were not aware of this for a lot of years. What happened? What was it that made you recognize that you had this condition, and how was it diagnosed?
You know, I had thought I didn't tolerate gluten for a long time. I just kind of felt better when I didn't eat those type of foods.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had more energy, I thought. I didn't have as much bloating when I ate non-gluten foods. But I never got tested. So it was about 8 years later when I just became really sick, with diarrhea and weight loss, and I couldn't eat anything. And I just knew, you know, there was something majorly wrong with me. So I went to the doctor and said, you know, can I be tested for celiac disease? Because I knew what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a blood test, a screening, where they look for a certain antibody in your blood. And mine came back very high, so they recommended I have a biopsy of my intestines so that they could biopsy it and examine it under a microscope and see if I actually had celiac disease, and I did. And so that's kind of how it is diagnosed, first with a blood test and then with a biopsy if your blood test is positive.
Your associate, Jennifer Bucco Lampau, she
mm-hmm.
had a weight problem. Now, she's a chef, for heaven's sake. There's very few skinny chefs that I've ever seen.
Right. But
usually they're tasting all of their own food. Now,
yes.
The French have a very, very fat-rich diet, and they don't have half of the health problems like we've got. But Jennifer, her story was quite interesting because she said she had been battling the bulge for so much of her life. Tell us a little bit about her story.
Yeah, she has, you know. After she kind of dealt with a loss in her family of her father, it would seem like after that she was almost more of an emotional eater, and she had struggled with her weight. Even though we were writing these healthy cookbooks together, she still battled it like a lot of people do. And so, you know, she just had a life-changing moment where she realized that, you know, she wanted to be healthier, and she has lost over 60 pounds now. But really, I mean, eating the foods in our cookbook, and exercise has been a huge part of her life now. She, you know, has done a triathlon and really, really changed her life. I'm so proud of her, and she's so much healthier now, and she's done wonderful, and she loves food. So clearly, you can lose weight, you can eat healthy, and still eat good, healthy food.
You have gluten-free recipes in this book, which I'm sure a number of my listeners would be very interested in, because there are so many people today, and I even have to include myself, who have noticed that they feel better when they're not taking in the wheat flours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very interesting patterning. It's not because you hate it. It is just something that seems to change in the body. And I think when people just sort of listen to what their body tells them, it works out better for them. And you have some suggestions about the way to eat things. One of the things you say is that if people, you know, you can get gluten-free bread today, you can buy that in the store. But
mm-hmm.
if you want to have lower carbs, you use corn tortillas. I would have thought that they would be pretty much the same. Why is the corn tortilla so much less than the flour?
As far as carbs or gluten, you mean carbs?
Well, gluten, and carbs.
Okay. So So basically, gluten is found in flour, but it's not found in corn, which surprises a lot of people. So corn and rice are naturally gluten-free, so you can have those foods. So corn tortillas, typically, if you look at the ingredients on the majority of them that I see is like corn, oil, water, lime. So, you know, that's all gluten-free. And then the carbs are a little bit lower on the corn tortillas, and sometimes you get a little more fiber in there, too. And, you know, the one thing about gluten-free foods is that they're very expensive. Corn tortillas, very inexpensive. So it's kind of a nice staple to have in a gluten-free diet, definitely.
Now, what this book does, which is very interesting, you break it down into seasons, winter, summer, spring, fall, and it really is quite nice. And, of course, you have your recommendations for every month. And we'll just, you know, we'll just take this month of February. And when we're looking at the month of February, we're still feeling like it's winter. And this is something that, I don't know where you are, but I know where I am. We still have the cold weather. And when you come in, the idea of a celery stick and a, you know, just a piece of cheese just absolutely doesn't do it because you are in the colder temps. I mean, that's a lot. You look at it and go, you please, I'll take a Snickers bar instead. So this is just the natural patterning of the body. During the summer, it's not such a big deal because it's warmer temperatures. Now, let's talk for a minute because each of these recipes in here are just really, really nice. But you have like a Cantonese chicken recipe. And everything is classified, gluten-free, low-carb, and also if this is a new recipe. And you've got some wonderful pictures in here. Let's talk about the Cantonese chicken, because this is so easy to make, and it really can be quite tasty and very, very filling. And the calories are low. Now, this is supposed to be for four servings, and my thought was when I read it, and maybe it's just because my eyes are just too big, but I thought this could even be, you know, if you didn't have anything else for a meal, it would be a serving for two people, a hefty serving. But it's a pound of boneless chicken breast, skinless. You cut it into cubes, a cup of chopped celery, a cup of sliced drained water chestnuts, one 14.5-ounce can of bean sprouts. You rinse them and drain them. Equal sized can of chicken broth and 5 teaspoons of light soy sauce, 1.5 tablespoons of cornstarch, a little bit of salt if you wanted, a little bit of pepper. And it's so easy to make. I mean, these recipes are really, really simple, and you could do different things with seasonings. But you cook your chicken cubes until they're cooked through, remove from the pan, add your celery, water chestnuts, bean sprouts, stir fry. This is a stir fry dish for about 3 minutes. And while that's cooking, your broth, your soy sauce, your cornstarch, you whisk that all together until it's nice and smooth and add that to the pan. Bring it to a boil. Let it simmer for about 5 minutes. Add a little salt and pepper. Put your chicken in there and heat through. And if you want, serve it over brown rice. I mean, that is fast, simple, quick, easy. I don't know what else to say about it. What else would you add to that recipe if you wanted to make something different with it?
Well, I think you can always add a little spice if you like spice. So you could always add some red pepper flakes if you wanted to. You could add more certain vegetables if you wanted to. So, yeah, that I think is a perfect example, that recipe, of, you know, what we wanted for our cookbook, because we wanted quick, easy stuff that people maybe was new. You know, people get tired of cooking the same chicken dishes. So if you're bored with chicken, you don't know what else to do with it, here's a perfect example. Feels like you're eating like something from a restaurant, but you're making it in 30 minutes. All of the ingredients that in our recipes are from regular grocery stores. You don't have to go to specialty stores, and most of them can be made in 30 minutes or less. So I think that was great that you picked that recipe, because I think it's similar to so many of the others in that they're quick, healthy, tasty, different, and maybe having you trying, you know, some different flavors that you didn't even know of putting together before.
Now, what I like, too, is that you showed the calories, and it's broken down. So this Cantonese chicken, it can serve four people. It's 185 calories for one serving. So when you divvy that up, that is very reasonable. If you had a light salad and, you know, something else to go with it, that would just be very satisfying. In fact, you've got jalapeno corn muffins in here that I found very interesting.
Yeah, that was a popular.
Oh, I bet it is, because the muffins, corn muffins, are very popular anyhow. I mean, there is a very famous restaurant that the woman had became successful because of her cornbread and the corn muffins that she put together, as well as some other goodies. But this doesn't have a lot of fat, but it's so easy to make. Now, you have in here, this is not gluten-free. You have in here 1 1/4 cup of all-purpose flour, 3/4 cup of cornmeal, and I'd say with the cornmeal, you can use coarse ground. There are some stores that you can get a fine, medium, or coarse ground. 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 2 eggs, 1 cup of low-fat buttermilk, 1 tablespoon of oil, 1 jalapeno pepper, mincing that up finely, 1 green bell pepper, you mince that up finely, 1 red bell pepper minced finely, and then 1/2 cup of a reduced-fat shredded cheddar cheese. Now, I wouldn't have expected cheddar cheese in a muffin, but that does make a difference. And with the bell pepper, that makes a difference, too. So you're getting a different type of texture, and it's also very colorful.
It is.
Just amazing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and the oven, let me just finish the first time or whatever you have to do here. The oven, 400 degrees. You put your flour, cornmeal, baking powder, and salt. Put that together. And then you take your eggs, you whisk them, add your buttermilk and oil, mix that, add the jalapeno pepper, the other peppers, all the peppers actually, and cheese to your dry ingredients and toss well to coat. And then make a little well in the center of your dry ingredients. Pour your wet ingredients into that well, gently combined, just until the dry ingredients are moistened. It's going to be thick and lumpy. And this is going to make 12 muffins. Bake the muffins once you fill the muffin tin for 25 minutes or until golden brown. Now, could you make the extra-large jumbo muffins instead of making 12?
Yeah, probably make half of the amount. You could do the big ones. And, you know, the one thing I like about the smaller muffins is just for portion control. I think, you know, one muffin is like the perfect portion size, and it's going to give you probably the proper amount of carbohydrates, too.
And that is 130 calories. Now, for someone... Per muffin. For someone that's on a gluten-free diet, how would they adjust that recipe, or can it be adjusted?
Sure, they could just substitute, you know, gluten-free flour for the all-purpose regular flour in the recipe. And a lot of the gluten-free flours that you can find, they're usually a blend of different flours, and some of them are saying you can substitute it, you know, cup for regular flour. So I would try one of those first and see. I haven't tested that recipe gluten-free. I kind of use other recipes that I've used for corn muffins and made those gluten-free. Mm-hmm. But it would be very simple because everything else is gluten-free in that recipe except for the flour. I want to say that those muffins just have been so popular, and the red and green peppers look so pretty at Christmas time, too. So they're wonderful bread that you could serve at Christmas time, and these are more savory, and that's why we added the cheese in there. And then the other comment is, if you don't like spice, you know, some people see the jalapeno pepper and they just get turned off by it. You know, you can just eliminate it and just do the regular green peppers.
Now, one of the components that you cover as well, you have a number of recipes in here for vegetarians, which I think there are a number of people that like to follow that. But there also with these other recipes. Like if you wanted to fix a chili recipe, you have like the white chicken chili recipe in here. Someone could eliminate the meat and maybe add tofu or figure out another protein that maybe they could bring in if they were vegetarian into the dishes. And that's what I think is nice about your book. People can explore, but you've got such a diversity here. That if you're a vegetarian, you can find some recipes. If you're gluten-free, if that's your dietary pattern, you can find something with that as well. What is your favorite recipe, and I know that's a big question to ask, with this book? Which ones for you really grabbed you and said, oh, this I could have once a week and I'd just be happy as a clam?
You know, the one recipe that I would say I miss the most because I can't eat it anymore because it has gluten in it, and it's hard to find this gluten-free, is the tortellini soup. It's delicious, and it's just hard to find gluten-free tortellini. Mm-hmm. But that is a really good one and popular. The other recipes that I love are, I don't know if I can name one, but the salsa turkey meatloaf is so simple. It's so full of flavor, and meatloaf sounds boring. Well, this is not boring. My family loves this and is always asking for that. I love our sweet potato fries as well.
Oh, now you've got to talk about the sweet potato fries, because sweet potato fries are just fabulous, and kids enjoy them, and what a great way to give them nutrition. Share your recipe with us.
Yes. The sweet potato fries are delicious, and they're so easy. You don't need to go buy frozen sweet potato fries. You just take your sweet potatoes, peel them. It takes, 5 minutes probably. I think I timed it the other day, just myself, just doing these. It takes 5 minutes to just peel and slice up a sweet potato into, like half-inch fries. And then you just toss them with a little olive oil. In this recipe, we used like cumin and chili powder and a little bit of cayenne if you like spice. And then you just mix all that together, put it on a baking sheet, and bake it. Delicious. Now, I've also made just kind of a different version of that's not in the cookbook, too, where I've made them a little sweet sometimes. So I might use a little cinnamon, Splenda brown sugar on there too, and kind of do the same thing, and then just bake them off. And they are so kid friendly. I have a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old, and they love those sweet potato fries. And they're so good. They're so full of vitamin A. They're one of the healthiest carbs you can eat. Tons of fiber. So it's definitely a food the whole family could enjoy.
You've got a recipe in here for hot chocolate, the Almond Joy hot chocolate that's gluten-free, low carbs, and this is a brand new recipe that you came up with. And this, you can make 4 servings, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised if somebody said they wanted seconds. It's only got 105 calories per cup. You're going to need 1/4 cup of sliced almonds, 4 cups of unsweetened almond milk, 1/4 cup of real good cocoa powder, 1/4 cup of Splenda sugar blend, 1/2 teaspoon of coconut extract, and 1/2 cup of fat-free whipped topping. And this is how simple it is. You are going to sauté in a dry pan, no butter in it, your almonds, and you just sauté them until they start getting golden brown. They'll have a particular aroma. They just smell wonderful. And you put that aside because that's going to cool. Then you're going to, in a blender, add almond milk, cocoa powder, Splenda, and coconut extract to the blender. Blend it until it's blended, obviously, and a little bit foamy. You add that hot cocoa mixture into a saucepan over medium heat, bring it to a simmer, and that's how simple it is. Then you pour it into your mug, nice and hot, put 2 tablespoons of your fat-free whipped topping on top, and sprinkle with about 1 tablespoon of cooled roasted almonds. And you've got something here that is going to satisfy your sugar craving. And that is really, really big. I think that's something that many times, and here we are in the cooler temperatures right now. Something like that just is so satisfying. I don't know of anybody who doesn't like a good cup of cocoa.
Yeah, that's a great one. And I'm from Chicago, so we are, we have these cold winters, so that's perfect on a cold day. And it just shows you that people with diabetes really don't have to suffer. They can have treats, too, and that hot chocolate is a perfect example. It's delicious.
Now, with the information on diabetes, one of the things that I think happens is that people feel so frequently they don't have the time to fiddle around with food very much. Moms are busy, dads are busy, kids, well, they just want to pick up something and run. And you've got a lot of different recipes in here that, one, they just don't take very much time to make, and two, they actually are going to taste good, and three, kids like them if you've got a family, and you've got tremendous variety here. How many recipes do you have in this book?
We have about 340 recipes, so it's an enormous book, and the way it's broken down is that it's 5 entrees per week. So, and they're all dinner recipes. So you could do 5 entrees per week, 2 side dishes, and then there's 1 dessert per month. And the reason why we did the five dishes is we didn't think people actually are still cooking 7 days per week. And, you know, you might go out to eat once or twice a week. And then also some of these recipes, you might have some leftovers. So, yeah, it's over 340 recipes, though, so it's enormous.
It really is. Now, with someone that discovers they have celiac, or let's say they find out about diabetes, one of the things that has really been a big step forward, as far as I'm concerned, is the recognition of how you have to alter your food habits. And mm-hmm. I think for a lot of people, they just feel a little bit overwhelmed with that. And I know that Jennifer, who has dealt with a weight problem, she has a love for food. What suggestions would you give to people that really find themselves having to battle with this adjustment? You've gone through this yourself. What would you want to say to people about that?
You know, I think it's just be patient, because a lot of people have had their eating habits their whole life, and it's hard to change. I think that's the biggest part of you know, having diabetes or celiac disease, is just changing your habits. And it takes some time, and not to be so hard on yourself, and to realize that, you know, that you could have some bad days, but to try to get back on track the next day. And that really, the recommendations in this cookbook and for people with diabetes, it's just really how we all should be eating, diabetes or not. It's just healthy eating, and the American diet has just gotten so far from that, that, you know, it's hard for people to make that change. But just small steps, introducing, you know, more fruits and vegetables in your diet, and eating less processed foods, those are huge starts. If you're eating, you know, a lot of candy and sweets, to cut back on that. If you're drinking regular pop and juice, those are just some basic steps to start with, and then to try to just kind of add small things in, you know, weekly or every couple of weeks. And diabetes educators can really help with those changes, because they're specialized in that, and work with people in setting small goals and working towards bigger goals.
Well, there's everything from a Cobb salad in here to angel hair pasta with turkey, bacon, and peas, and everything in between. This is a fabulous cookbook, and you know what? I bet if you were a single person, you could probably cut the recipes in half, and you've got two servings, and you could have one left over, like she said earlier. But a lot of this food, there's not going to be anything left. If you have a family, they're going to scarf it up. They're going to say, this is good. And as she said with hers, everybody has their favorite. So it's a good thing to try, to explore, and enjoy wellness. I think that that is so important. Laura, you have a website that people can go to find out more about the Healthy Calendar Diabetic Cooking. This is the second edition. And they can go to diabetes.org, diabetes.org, to get the book. It also is available in bookstores and at Amazon.com. Well, Laura, mm-hmm. congratulations on conquering something that really could have been very devastating to you, just by changing your diet and becoming aware. Congratulations. And we look forward to the next cookbook.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me.
It was a delight, Laura. That was Laura Rodinelli Hambleton, and, of course, Chef Jennifer Buckle-Lampau is the person. The two of them, as a team, put this phenomenal book together. Check it out, because if you want to change your eating style and still enjoy food, this is a good, good book to have in your cookbook collection. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to come back in just a moment. Don't go away. More good things to share.
Celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Northwest Women's Show, Friday through Sunday, March 1st through 3rd at Seattle's CenturyLink Event Center, where you'll find 3 days packed with fashion, fitness, food, and fun. Each day features life-changing seminars and, of course, shopping, shopping, shopping. Meet smooth crooner Philip Lomax from The X Factor. Enjoy live music from country music star Jared Neiman and others. Learn what the numbers can tell you about your future, from numerologist to the stars, Glynis McDonald. Magic Hats and get a peek at how the Ice Chip Grannies successfully navigated ABC's hit show, The Shark Tank. JCPenney will give you a heads up on trends for spring with fashion shows, and everyone loves those smoking hot firefighters. The Northwest Women's Show, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, March 1st through 3rd, sponsored by Snoqualmie Casino, Safeway, and BECU. Show schedules and ticket information at nwwomenshow.com. Sponsored by Snoqualmie Casino, Safeway, AARP, and BECU.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are open, and if you'd like to call in and chat with me, well, I would be delighted to do that. I'll be happy to light up your life, with your intuitive perceptions of insight that will empower your life. And I say that with you because there is that communication that allows me as an individual to assist you, perhaps in understanding things and resolving certain conditions that maybe you would otherwise not be able to resolve. Treasure. This is something that is fascinating. I don't know very many people that are not intrigued with the treasure hunters of the world, who take risks, who dare to go after the unknown. You think about the people that searched for the Titanic until they find it, or they have found treasures that have been buried for centuries, whether it's on the ocean floor, in a mountain cave, or in someone's backyard. It is always amazing when we make these discoveries. Well, there was a man by the name of Robert Morris. And this occurred, this particular event occurred in May of 1822. It's May 9th of 1822, in fact, the exact date. A Virginia innkeeper, that was Robert Morris, finds out about a hidden treasure. Now, what happened is a letter was found that was written by a man, Thomas Beale. He had left a padlocked iron box in Robert Morris's keeping the previous winter. Now, the letter instructed Morris to hold the box for 10 years, and if no one called for it in that time, Morris was to open it. Then Beale disappeared. Nobody knew what happened to him. He could have drowned somewhere. Communication. I have to remember, they didn't have cell phones then. 23 years go by. Morris has held the box, never opened it. Well, finally, he did. He saw the letter inside and three sheets of encrypted paper. This is what was in the letter. Beale had put together a group who were fond of adventure And if mixed with a little danger, all the more acceptable. They were determined to visit the Great Western Plains and enjoy themselves hunting buffalo, grizzly bears, and whatever else happened to be around. Now, Beale's expedition consisted of 30 people. They had managed to track a herd of buffalo to a ravine. They discovered the ravine was rich with gold and silver. Now, this group of 30 mined the gold and silver for 18 months. Beale took the gold and silver that he got, put it in a cave. All of the people there knew about the cave because they had to protect it. Now, what happened, Beale was not expecting. He found, when he went back to the cave to take some more stuff to it, it was being used by farmers to store vegetables. Well, he decided that wasn't a good thing. Someone might discover the treasure. So he decided to move it. This is what was said in the letter. I have deposited in an excavation 6 feet below the surface of the ground 1,014 pounds of gold and 3,812 pounds of silver, deposited November 1819, December 1821, 1,988 of silver, also jewels. The above is securely packed in iron pots with iron covers. The vault is roughly lined with stone, and the vessels rest on solid stone and are covered with the others. Now, this encoded pieces of paper contained instructions for finding the treasure and how it should be dispersed to the heirs of the original 30 adventurers. To this day, nobody has ever found the hiding place. Naturally, you're not going to find a treasure until you find the hiding place. So it is still out there to be discovered. Ah, never ends. All kinds of interesting situations, and it's a treasure hunter's dream. Just like the Lost Dutchman's mine. So many things that shift and change. The earth moves. You just don't know how things are going to be moving when it comes to being buried. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008 is the number to call into. By the way, for those of you in the Pacific Northwest that are listening, we have the Women's Show coming up this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, March 1, 2, and 3. I love this show. I've been doing it for years, and every year there's new people to meet, new things that are on exhibit. It is just incredibly entertaining, lots of fun, and gals, it's all dedicated to you. That's right. So you're going to be able to have a fabulous time, and I'm doing a women's forum on Friday, March the 1st, from 1 until 3. I'm going to have 1 till 4. I'm going to have 6 speakers. Each of them will have a very specialized subject of knowledge that they're going to be sharing information about with you. You'll be able to interact with these speakers. And, of course, I'm going to be in booth number 405, and I welcome you to stop by and say hello. We're going to have gobs of books and CDs and all kinds of things like that. So I hope that you'll come by and say hello. And, of course, I'm doing little mini sessions for people while I'm there, too. No appointment is necessary. But check out the Northwest Women's Show. Just go to NorthwestWomensShow.com, and you'll get all of the information about parking, etc. Now, something I do want to let you know, because there is a very, very special game that's going on in Seattle the evening of March the 2nd. If you're planning on coming out to the show on Saturday, get out there before 3 o'clock in the afternoon. From 3 o'clock in the afternoon on, they're going to be charging $40 a car. $40 for parking. So this is all being held at the CenturyLink Conference Center. So get there early on Saturday. Friday and Sunday doesn't make any difference. Saturday, it does. Well, one of my readers sent me a story that I thought was very poignant because it is so important for us to think about what it takes to become successful and what we can do as individuals to have a life that is going to, well, be productive and involved. And there was a research scientist that was asked why he thought he was so much more creative than the average person. He was very hardworking. He said he felt that the reason he was so creative is because of his mother. And there was a particular lesson that he learned when he was quite small. He said he had been trying to remove a bottle of milk from the refrigerator when he lost the grip. At that time, it was in glass bottles. And it fell and spilled all over the kitchen floor. And it created, obviously, a very large milk puddle, splashing everywhere. Well, his mother comes into the kitchen, and she didn't scold him. She didn't lecture him. Not at all. She just said to him, "Son, you have just made one of the biggest messes I have ever seen. You have done a superb job at this. Now, that it's all spilled, do you want to play in it before we clean it up?" What a mom. Well, that's what he did. Splashed, played. And after a few minutes of watching them do this, his mother said, "You know, son, whenever you make a mess like this, eventually you're going to have to clean it up and restore everything to proper order. So, how would you like to do that? We could use a sponge, a towel, or a mop. Which do you prefer?" Well, he chose the sponge. And, of course, she held him. He helped him. He was a little boy, and they cleaned up the mess together. And his mother said, "You know, what we have here is a failed experiment into how to effectively carry a big milk bottle with two tiny hands. Let's go out in the backyard and fill the bottle with water and see if you can discover a way to carry it without dropping it." And he said what he learned from this lesson with his mother is not to be afraid to make mistakes. He said, "You can always learn how to do something differently." And he said, "That's what scientific experimentation is all about." And I really liked this story because I thought, how many times have we had situations where maybe someone just verbally slammed us up against a wall and we honestly were not aware of a different way of doing something? We tried something in the beginning, it didn't work out well. And so we go about feeling like we're a failure because something wasn't done a certain way. But there's more than one way to do things, isn't there? And that is something that he learned. And it stood him in good stead as a scientist going through school and everything that was necessary for him to achieve that prestigious position. But it was all based, a lot of his feeling about himself, about his work, came about because of the thoughtful consideration of a mother with a little boy saying, "I wonder how we can do things differently." I think we need to be gentle with ourselves many times. I think we need to sometimes be gentle with others because they honestly may not know a better way of doing things. And as adults, so often we might be patient with children, but not with ourselves. And I think we need to be kind to ourselves. And then ask the question, how could this be done differently? If I wasn't so good at the way I did it, what do I need to know? And don't be afraid to involve others and ask the question, how can this be done differently? We don't have to reinvent the wheel, you know, but learning how to utilize it in particular ways that we're not familiar with, asking someone else for help can be a very positive step to take. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Give us a call if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Topperson will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Topperson. Topperson is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Topperson or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Topperson, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. 888-627-6008. We've got a caller on the line. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from? Hello? I wonder if we lost the caller. Hello?
Yeah, she's not speaking, so I'm hanging up on
Okay. So I think, caller, if you can hear me, if you're on a wireless, we're not hearing you. And so many times that can happen with people if they're on a wireless phone or the signal drops. Well, we're waiting for whoever called to call back. I wanted to share something with you that really is significant to me, and that is telephone usage. And the reason, my goodness, that's how I do this show. And I love the technology. I've been involved with the technology on multiple levels, just like the rest of you have, for just about all my life. But one of the things that has occurred is a lot of people have said, I don't need landlines anymore. And they go with wireless. Well, there's been a number of individuals that I've talked with just in the past month that opted to keep their landlines, and they were in areas like New York and New Jersey, places where storms have hit, and their wireless just wasn't functioning. Cell phone towers weren't working. All kinds of things went wrong, but that loyal landline was. Now, 25% of cell phone towers from New Hampshire to North Carolina after Hurricane Sandy were wiped out. Just gone. And so many people have gotten rid of their landlines because the cell phone is absolutely marvelous. You keep it charged. But if you don't have electricity, you're not going to be able to keep it charged. Now, by 2006, about 10% of households had gotten rid of landlines completely. Between 2008 2011, the number of wireless-only households nearly doubled. Payphones and in major cities, they weren't being taken care of by the phone companies. They fell into disrepair. And there was a New York Times reporter, Andrew Key, who said landlines in homes began to collect dust and serve an increasingly decorative function. However, with the various situations that have evolved, people are realizing how important they are. And the reason that they are important is that they rely on underground copper wire rather than electricity and radio waves. And when the electricity is gone, the radio waves aren't working, you still have the phone. You still have a way of communicating. And I have some other little things. Let's go to our caller. I think we've got her back. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi. My name is
Hi,
Tina.
Dear. You must be on a cell phone. I think you called in a moment ago.
Yes, yes.
All right. And we have a very little slight delay, so I hope we don't lose the signal again. Where are you calling in from, and what's your name?
Wilmington, North Carolina. My name is Tina.
Well, Tina, it's a delight to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us today. Now, let me give you some information. First thing, continue your education. Second, I want you to consider joining a group like Toastmasters so that you develop a comfort and an ease at speaking up in front of people. You are going to find yourself becoming involved in some kind of a community endeavor where speaking and being clear when you speak, having that rapport with an audience is going to be very important. So it's practice, 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 practice. Your income is going to be increasing this year in little bits, not in gigantic amounts, but in little bits. You're a very hardworking, resourceful woman, and you need to respect and appreciate that of yourself. and realize that the investment in the continuing education for yourself and practicing public speaking is going to serve you very, very well. Do you have a question for me today?
Well, I just made this new move to North Carolina from New York. I'm here for about 2.5 months, and I'm with my son right now, and I wanted to know if I'm going to find a place to live. I'm finding it kind of difficult to find either something to rent or maybe something that's not too expensive to buy. I'm not sure which way to go, but...
Well, I'd say rent. And I'm seeing you walking into a realtor's office and presenting the information about what you would like and that you would like to find a place for rent. And I'm just seeing you talking to people. And they're going to be making you aware of some very nice places that you could rent. They're going to be reasonable in cost. But what you need to do is shop around. If you're wanting to buy a house, you need to shop around very carefully. Because for some reason, I am seeing some places that have been built, it sounds like Washington here, in floodplain areas. And they're going to have some pretty heavy storms come through periodically. So you want to make sure when you're ready to buy a home that it's not going to be in a floodplain area. You have to research that very, very carefully. So I would encourage you to rent, and I think you're going to find that where you really would like to live is going to be, oh, maybe about 10 miles, 8 to 10 miles away from where you are right now. And you're going to find out about a very, very nice neighborhood. It looks like it's a bit older, but it's not. It's in a nice. It's a nice community, and it's going to be easy for you to be able to not just get to work, but also for your son to have a good school environment. It's a very, very nice neighborhood that I'm looking at. But I'd encourage you to rent first. So if you have some cash available to buy a home, just stick it away in a savings account, leave it alone. And even though interest isn't very much right now, just let it compound the best that it can. And then you just go ahead and look. Really decide on what you want. It might take you the cycle of two, and I don't know if it's 2 months or by February of next year or in 2 years, but the cycle of two is going to be related to a home if you decide you want to buy one.
Okay.
Does that help you there?
Yes, it does.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So you take care. You're going to do quite well, but don't give up on that continuing education.
Thank you.
You are very welcome. This is Donna Sebo, and I know that we're just about out of time. And I wanted to just share with you a thought. If you're living in the part of the country where storms are hard and heavy and things can happen, and you want to be sure that you're never without phone service, don't give up your landline. I have been talking with so many people, like I said, just recently, and they have agreed with that. And they say, I may not use it all the time, but by golly, it is there and it is reliable. I am not letting it go. So many times it is something that if you have elderly relatives, you want to be sure that it's possible for them, regardless of the circumstances, to be able to reach for emergency purposes 911 or anybody else, including you, if they need you. Donna Sebo here. We're just about out of time. I'm so delighted that you're with me. Day after tomorrow is going to be the first day of the Women's Show, and by golly, I hope you're able to come out if you're in the Washington, Western Washington area. It is a wonderful event. Come on out. Say hello. Remember, I'll be in booth 405. I look forward to seeing you there, and we're going to have a Best of Donna tomorrow. That's on Friday. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about Islamic leaders. We're going to be talking about a historian that has dedicated years to doing research on people we've never even heard about, but in Islamic history are very, very significant and important. We'll find out from Saul Silas Fossey about what he discovered when he did his research. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You're one of a kind. Aren't you glad You don't want to be like everybody else. You want to be your own person. Take this day, smile at yourself in the mirror, be kind to yourself, realizing that this is a new day, a new opportunity. Enjoy it to the fullest. God bless. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thank you for joining me today. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge bring humanity closer to truth.
Don't go away, everyone. You're listening to BBS Radio. This is Charles Giuliani from The People Speak. Stay tuned. Hello, everyone. This is Charles Giuliani, and you're listening to Butt Kicking BBS Radio.
Teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information. You go to Twitter, Total Tutor, and follow me. Also, Neil Hess Haley Facebook. And I mean, I'm amazed. I never thought in my career that now I'm going to be talking and interviewing celebrities that are going to be on the screen, and it's not even debuted yet. And it's an amazing thing to welcome the program, Tim Holmes, celebrity, and you're going to be the strong man in Oz, the great and powerful. Tim, thanks for calling.
No problem. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, your background's very, very interesting, and I think that definitely a story could be about you, especially if you continue to be successful in Hollywood. And we could talk about that another time, another story, because you started out as a firefighter and not to actor. How did you get involved in Hollywood?
Actually, you know, I moved out here to California when I was 18 from Michigan for music. And it took me 10 years, and I finally got signed to MCA Records. I went on tour for about a year and a half over in Europe, and I did the East Coast. I was doing Southern rock music, kind of like Kid Rock's music, before Kid Rock. And then I got dropped from the album. From there, I got into acting classes and studying. I took acting in high school. I got back into it later on after the music career, and then I started booking to some soap opera under five stuff, B films, this and that. And then I had that little midlife crisis going on, as we all do. And I got kind of freaked out, like, man, if I don't make it, I need a plan B. So I went to school to get my associates to become a firefighter. I went to the fire academy, became an EMT. I was on reserves at Warner Brothers Fire Department. And then from there, I was going to go to L.A. City. I got invited to L.A. City's fire academy, which is a long process, man. I didn't know it was going to be – I didn't know it took that to become a firefighter, but I'm glad it takes that because it's an amazing job. It was one of the best jobs I've ever had in my life.
What's amazing, Tim, is that people, their stories. I had someone from the – John Littlefield from Extreme Home Makeover, Home Edition, saying that he didn't get his big break till he started working on houses, and someone spotted him. So he worked on the right house. So I guess in Hollywood, what you have to do before you make it is find a job where – some of my friend, G.J. Reynolds, is in L.A. right now, and he tells me, you just walk down the street and you spot a celebrity. You just never know if you're going to be the one serving coffee to them, putting on a fire, doing some odd jobs for that right producer to get your big break. Isn't that true? I'm sure you've seen that in Hollywood all the time.
It is very true. I mean, I started a business in the fire department, putting together events for people. And I started it by passing a flyer out, and I did it in the slow season, which is Christmas. And that's a slow season for acting. And in the FD, I only had, 10 shifts a month. So it's a very lax schedule. So I'm not a lazy guy, so I always want to work and make some extra money and do some fun stuff, and I like working outside. So this business took off, man. I have worked at Nicolas Cage's house, Michael Keaton's house, Jennifer Garner, Ben Affleck's house, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jim Belushi, major producers, directors, the president of 20th Century Fox, president of ABC. I mean, ballers. But at that time, I didn't really have anything in the acting world to say, hey, can you help me out because I'm an actor. Everybody's an actor out here. So I just wanted to keep it business. I never approached them in that field to say, listen, can you help me out? Because I didn't have nothing to show them or showcase. So it took me a while. I learned how to shoot. I learned how to edit. I started writing. I used to write all my music, so I started writing screenplays. I wrote a screenplay about a biker guy. It's called Detroit Riders. It's basically Sons of Anarchy meets Biker Boys in Detroit. I shot short on it. I chopped that up. I had that in my reel. From there, I started booking gigs in Michigan when we had the Michigan Film Incentive playing bad guy roles. So I built up myself a decent acting reel, and I started pitching that to my clients when I got out there. And then I finally got a break. One of my clients said, okay, he took my headshot resume, looked at my reel, liked it. 2 months later, I got a call from a casting director who was casting one of his projects, and they called me in for a read. I got the call back, and then from the call back, I went to producers, and I booked it. And that's the part of Monty, which is on Vegas, which is on CBS, Tuesdays at 10 p.m. with Michael Chiklis and Dennis Quaid. I was in the pilot, and I should be in a couple more. And that's it, man. So, I mean, it does help to know these people. But when you get a chance, and if you screw that chance up and drop the ball, forget about it, man. You ruined your chance. You won't get another chance. So you better come correct. When you get your big break, you better be prepared and up on your game to knock it out the park. That's
how I look at things too, Tim. And if you follow my career in radio in the last 3 years, how every time I said, I got to get the next A-list celebrity, I got to get this next person. And what it's very interesting is interviewing guys like yourself that are up-and-comers, they're always like, hey, man, I talk about you. And we hang out and say, hey, I have a good buddy that has this charity or foundation, or I have this person here or that person there. And you're sitting here and saying, holy cow, why don't you come to this event or come meet you somewhere else? And before you know it, it just grows from there, and it's amazing what happens. And it sounds like that. But then how were you able to get your big break? Because the other movies and stuff, they were good parts, but this is huge for you. Tell us how you got the big break for Oz.
I got a It was an agency, like one of the only agencies in Michigan that had that time. I moved back home from California in 2002, had a midlife crisis, freaked out, moved back home, bought the house I grew up in, hung out, relaxed, met my wife. We got married. Now we have two twin boys who are going to be three next month, and I started learning the craft. So I bought a camera. I started shooting. I took classes for a directory of photography to set up my shots. Learned how to edit from the Mac store. So I learned how to shoot the film, edit the film, and I was already writing, so I wrote stuff for myself. So when I got the break for an audition for The Wizard of Oz, they said, you can either come into the office and we'll shoot your audition here, or you can shoot it yourself and upload it to us. So me, being the little wannabe filmmaker, man, I called up all my buddies. I planned it out. We shot my audition piece on location with props.
What?
And we shot this like a little short film. And then I edited it all up, I color corrected it, add my titles in my slate in the front. It looked like a little short film. But I sent it to my agent, and they're like, oh, man, you can't do it like this. This is not, you need a whitewash, plain audition. I'm like, y'all, come on, man. This is Sam Raimi. This guy grew up shooting film and making films on a Super 8. He will love this. He will love this. I'm telling you. One thing they're going to say is, no, redo it, please. So they sent it to him. No more than a week later, the callback I got from Sam Raimi's people is they wanted references from past producers and people I've worked with to make sure I'm not some crazy guy. Because this audition piece, I look like a crazy dude, man. Let me tell you, bro. I'm telling you right now, I look like a crazy guy. So we gave them referrals, and that was my callback, man. And I was booked. They're like, all right, you got the job. We want to know da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And that was it, man. And then I had to go to the studio and meet Sam Raimi, and we talked a little bit about my character, this and that. And then it was crazy because I wasn't training in the gym. And you know, as you were, you used to be a wrestler. You used to train all the time. I had a year and a half off of training because of these kids. Yeah, I mean it's 5 days a week, man.
Definitely,
if you want to work
absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely, it's something that you're right, Tim. When you're saying, hey, you put muscle on, you got different things. I lived in that gym when I was a pro wrestler, and now I wish I had the time. But being an entrepreneur, I try to get enough time, but I don't get enough. That's another thing. I'm trying to get more sleep, Tim. That's the first goal. But then I guess the next would be to get if I could keep making it more, and I have that time, then I'll devote it more. Or if somebody says, you know, being 6'10", Tim, they say, by the way, you know what, Neil, you would be great in this part in this movie because I am an entertainer and I was as a wrestler, and you would be a great part here then, but you need to gain 20 pounds. Hey, we'll make sure we take care of that. And that's kind of what happened to you, right? They basically told you you had to put some more weight on to be the strong man. So how, and you said you weren't getting the opportunity to train with two twins. I have four kids, by the way, and I have three. I have three under the age of four. So it's 4, 2, and 6 months. So my life is crazy, just like yours with twins. So finally you decided, hey, did they tell you you have to gain the weight to be able to do this part? Is that what they pretty much told you?
Basically, Sam Raimi, because when I went to go meet Sam Raimi at the studios, I met him, the stunt coordinator, the DP, the editor, and all the heavies. And I mean, I could have lost the job. You know what I'm saying? I was booked. I didn't sign we didn't sign anything yet. It wasn't finalized yet. They had to meet me. So if I would have shown up and been a sloppy mess, I probably would have lost a gig. But, you know, I had to take my shirt off, and they had to look at me, stand next to this girl for the sizing, which was going to be the same size as Michelle Williams and the size as my strongman's wife. And they videoed it. And Sam was like, you're going to work out for the part, right? I'm like, Sam, yes, I'm sorry, man. Excuse my sloppiness right now. But, you know, I've been trying to raise these kids with my wife. We had preemies or twins. And I'm like, I don't get no sleep, bro. So help me out, and I will train every day starting tomorrow. So I did. I trained every day, starting the next day. I trained every day. I went to GNC health food store. I asked the big, giant muscle guy there, dude, I got to gain some weight. What do I do? So, man, I took muscle gain powder. I took protein powder. I took all these other crazy pills the big guy told me to take. I spent like $1,000 a month in supplements. In 3 months, I gained 25 pounds. Not muscle, but 25 pounds. I did no cardio. I lifted heavy, heavy weight, small reps, because I want to be a lumberjack. I want to be a big, thick neck kind of guy.
Right.
And ate steak every day, ice cream shakes, pasta, all the huge fattening.
See, I remember that when I had to put weight on for wrestling because I was a skinny basketball player and I did the same thing. I remember.
It's easy to put it on. It's hard taking it off.
So basically you had a suit then, right? So it wasn't basically that your body shone. You had a suit for the strongman, right?
Oh, my. Dude, I was in leotard. This was the 1800s, you know what I'm saying? And these guys in the 1800s wore tights. I had like a little one-piece old-school bathing suit type thing. And it was like a leotard going over your thing. The typical old strongman picture you see of a strongman in a circus back then. Because that's what my character is. My character is a strongman in a traveling circus. And Oz, which is James Franco, he is a magician in a traveling circus. And that is our characters.
So it's a main character that wasn't in the first Wizard of Oz then, right? This is some of the differences, right?
Yeah. This most of the characters in here are different because this is a prequel to the movie we all saw growing up as kids. This is what happened before he came to the Land of Oz and become Land of Oz. And hopefully, and I'm pretty sure this movie is going to be amazing because I've seen it. And we've all seen the trailers, and it just looks unbelievable. I don't know anybody who's not going to want to see the next Wizard of Oz film, first of all, especially a Sam Raimi film. So if there is going to be another one, which Frank Baum, the writer of The Wizard of Oz, wrote 15 books about The Wizard of Oz. So there's a franchise here that could go on for three films at least, which is going to be amazing because Sam told me when I was done with my shoot after 2 months, Tim, you killed it. I love what you did. Good job. I appreciate your effort and all you brought to this role. And if there is another movie and we are going to do another one, you are going to be in it. I promise you, the strongman will return. I'm like, oh, Sam, thank you so much, man. Thank you, Sam.
Well, I hope, Tim, that we have regular interviews so we talk about your career other times and we can say when you're ready for the new one, we could be talking about it. We could be on set talking about it, all those things. That's what I like about my radio show is I try to get celebrities I connect with and say, you know what, man? We have a good connection, and you can see from our conversation on the radio, it was the same thing as when we were kind of talking on the phone before. Then that's where we're going on this. So basically, this strongman is one of the major roles in this. Where I would have not thought if you would have said the strong Oz, you think because what we grew up wouldn't think about that. So it's quite interesting. So are you almost like the guy that was right next to Jabba the Hutt in Star Wars type of thing, right? A right hand man type of thing, like that little kid. But I mean, that's a poor comparison, but it's kind of what I was thinking about, where the main person's henchman in certain ways, right?
I am definitely Oz's nemesis, and the bottom line of my character, without the strongman, there would never even be Oz in The Wizard of Oz. That's all I can say. That's it. Without the strongman, there would be no Oz. That's how pivotal my character is in the storyline.
So with your career in acting, which is a short career, it's not, you know, you don't have this gigantic resume. What did you learn from this role, from working with such talented people at the...
Working with James Franco, the dedication this man gives to his craft put me into that next level of thinking and focus. I thought I was focused. I brought weights and weight equipment to the set to put in my dressing room. I had pictures of strongmen on the wall all the way around me. All day long on set in my dressing room, I listened to music. Like hardcore heavy rap or heavy metal, just to get me in an angry, vicious mode, because that's what my character's through line is. What he does on the next level is, before, during, and after this film, this cat is living this and reading books about his character, reading books what his character would read during that time period in life, and just being involved in this character's background deeply, like and nobody does it more than Daniel Day-Lewis, who took a year to get ready for Lincoln. But Franco, every day on set, he'd be reading a book. And like, hey, what are you reading all the time? He's like, this is what Oz would read. I'm like, oh. So he's reading books about that time period, about inventions, about magicians, anything that pertains to his character's back history. he would be involved in a reading. So all day long, he's reading at night. He's reading during the day. In between takes, he's got the book on set with him, you know what I mean, reading it in between takes. So his dedication and just see what he gave to that is like, wow, so that's what it takes. Okay. And I would be the guy who, like, after they call break for my scene, go back to my dressing room and hang out and talk. I would sit in the back on the set and watch James Franco work, watch Milo Keynes work, watch Michelle Williams work, see how these actors carry themselves on set, what they do between takes, how they prepare for the take, what they do to get ready. And I like to do that because it puts the next level. I mean, these people are there for a reason. They're not there because they got lucky. Michelle Williams won the Oscar because she's doing something right.
Well, absolutely. Definitely.
That's what I learned about the dedication of these A-list actors, about what they're doing to prepare for the role and what they're doing during the course of their role on set.
Well, it sounds like, Tim, something you're going to be an A-list actor as well, especially if the success of Oz ends up becoming big. That's what starts everything and gets you going in different ways. So here's the other question. You know, every actor thinks about their next projects, okay? You know, this is over. You know, you're going to be in the limelight really soon about, you know, the premiere and all these different things. But what are some, or do you have any other upcoming projects coming up that you can talk to us about? I know I've been hearing, I'm learning this whole Hollywood thing now. I feel like I'm a Hollywood insider. I know that this is the time where everyone's busy with pilot season and, you know, everyone's just rolling around. They can't say anything of what they're doing. But you have any other projects you're working on right now that you can promote?
We've had a couple projects come our way. But my manager, my agent, we've all had a good talk. And right now, it's not about money for me, because I make money from my business. It's really about right now is the role, the project, and picking the right part for me to get to that next level. So if I just finished a supporting role on the Wizard of Oz movie coming out, which is a huge movie, and my last project after that was guest star role, possibly reoccurring role in Vegas with Dennis Quaid and Michael Chiklis, I can't go backwards, man.
No, you know what I mean? You can't.
I have to do something equivalent to that or more. So right now it's kind of a bummer because I love to work as an actor. And I just love acting. So what I do now to fulfill that is I take 18 study classes a week. 8 classes a week I'm taking right now, Monday through Friday. It's my full-time job. I'm training every day, Monday through Friday in the morning, and then I take classes in the afternoon and night every day. So we've had some stuff come in, but we've had to say no because it wasn't good enough, bottom line. And then we're just waiting for the pilot, some good pilot stuff to come out. Because of my kind of look and my kind of character that I like to do and portray, I'm more of a gritty kind of guy. Right now, the pilots that came out were all network stuff, which is sitcom kind of stuff, which I ain't a sitcom comedy guy. Come on, look at me. You know what I mean? So I'm more like the Walking Dead, Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I got you.
I'm more like one of those kind of guys. So we're waiting for some really nice gritty stuff that's going to come my way, where I could get a good chance to audition for a good project. I had a nice go see over at Marvel Comics for something. They didn't tell me it was for, but they just wanted to meet me, talk to me. I read for them. So we got some good stuff in the pipeline, but we're just being a little bit picky now. If I got to go a whole year, man, without working, I'll go a whole year without working, because if the project's not right for me for the next move in this chess game of Hollywood, I'm not going to take it, because, A, I don't need the money. B, I want to do it because it's right. It's a good project, and it's going to be good for my next move as an actor.
Well, Tim, it sounds like you're on the right track. Entrepreneur, movie star, and I'm telling you right now, once people find out about you, once this again premieres, and if it's successful and it does really well, people are going to be calling on you all the time. You know that, and I know that. That's how this business works. You get your first big break, and then somebody says, I'm writing a screenplay, and this is going to be a huge thing, and there's, let's say, Tom Cruise, and you're going to be the villain against Tom Cruise. I don't know. I'm just saying, these things will happen, trust me. As in being in the professional wrestling business and seeing once you get that first big break, if you keep going, you keep being ready, the next opportunity will come. So, Tim, where can we find more information on you and learn more about you?
My website is always up to date. I'll be working that weekly and get it going. It has my Twitter feed on it. It has my Facebook links and all that stuff, which is timholmes.net, TimHolmes.net. That's the best way to find me. You can Google me, Tim Holmes Actor. You can find a bunch of links. But timholmes.net is the way to get to me, find me, and see what's going on. Check out my stuff. You can see my film project, Short Riders. You can see the trailer I shot in that. Basically, all I need now for that bad boy is some money, and I'm going to shoot that thing in Detroit and get some lead name actors attached to it, which I already have a bunch of connections to. We'll do it once I can pay them the money they need.
Well, Tim, I'd love to have you on next month in March to talk about how you went on the red carpet, how that felt, and the experience of it. So I'll contact your agent. I have your number anyways, but I'll still contact your agent and make sure your publicity agent and make sure we can get you on again, okay?
On it, brother. Hey, when you come out here in March, man, let's go grab a beer and talk.
Absolutely. We'll definitely do that, Tim. So thanks again for calling, man.
My pleasure, brother. Thank you.
All right, take care. Okay, God bless to you, too.
Bye.
You're listening to Total Education Celebrity Show. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Beach Lifestyle segment on the Total Tutor Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. Got to go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Again, thanks to the Beach Lifestyle Celebrity Segment and SimplyG.com for sponsoring this great interview, and I'm really excited. This is going to be the third major, I can't believe it, third major event where a celebrity is calling in from. First of all, it was London, the Olympics. Then it was the Super Bowl. Well, I thought, come on now, could something even be bigger than that? Well, in a lot of ways, because of this country, it's the major sport. I have Brian Keselowski, driver, calling from the Daytona 500. Brian, how are you?
I'm doing great. I wish we were racing in the Daytona 500. Unfortunately, because of some issues in the engine department, we missed it through our qualifying race, but you know, it was a great race to be a part of, and in 2011 when we made it, and hopefully get a chance to do it again.
Well, and I hope so, and I hope to stay in touch with you and have you back on again, especially because you're really supporting an awesome cause, and that's why you're on the show today. And the key thing is that anyone that could be involved to help this, it's fantastic. So tell us what you're doing to help honor veterans with the WAA.
Sure. Well, through our sponsor, TruckerFan.com, they're both supporters of being able to help Reach Across America. And Reach Across America was on the call as our primary sponsor. And TruckerFan.com, they allowed that to happen through, you know, trying to come up with the funding themselves. And, you know, we do a lot of stuff with the fans and trying to get everybody out there and involved with the sport and how NASCAR works. And definitely more of a fan-oriented sport than most of them are. So, you know, we wouldn't be here if fans were here. I think most sports need to realize that. And that's something that we embrace in NASCAR. So, Reach Across America, guys came down, we're all Worcester, and his whole family. And they were definitely awesome to be a, you know, part of it and listen to them talk and about the things that they do with placing wreaths on Veterans Day for the Christmas season and how they do everything and how everything has come about. So, they've been doing this since 1992. And it's really an awesome thing. I was looking on their Facebook page the other day and reading up on how they even found some graves from like 1812. So they have, I think, all 50 states are involved now, and they have a lot of people that are involved both in volunteer-wise and a lot of different people in the trucking industry that have volunteered their trucks and their time to ship all the wreaths out. And there are over 240,000 wreaths that they place on graves every year. So it's a big operation, and I'm really proud to be a representative of it.
And it's very interesting, Brian, in the way that your sponsor, who allows this to be on the cars, how many charities have their sponsorship on the cars? Not many, are there?
Not many. I would definitely say ARP, which Jeff Gordon is probably one of the only ones I can think of. And you know, it's something that they're big supporters of. A lot of the TruckerFan.com people are ex-military, you know, ex-veterans, and they wanted to have something that they could support and bring a lot of support to. I mean, everybody can be patriotic, no matter what's going on out there and with brands and, you know, whether it be a Toyota like we raced this weekend or whatever brand you may be running, but everybody in America can be patriotic. It's not a brand-specific type thing. So that's something they wanted to represent. We did that with both the paint team in our car and working with Reach Across America, and everybody can get behind it. And that's what we're looking for.
And one thing also, you have to okay this as well with your sponsor in a way to say that really veterans are important to you as well, aren't they?
Absolutely. I have many family members that are veterans. My uncle, actually, who was helping me out this weekend, is a veteran of Vietnam War. And I have definitely cousins. My sister was in the Air Force, a cousin that was in the Navy SEALs, and, I mean, all sorts of different stuff. And I have cousins that were in the Army, and it just it goes from the top to the bottom. And so it definitely hits close to home. All my family has been involved with the military before. Brad used to be sponsored by Navy, so it's definitely a good reaction that we've got from all the fans. And everything has definitely been very positive.
And that's fantastic, and I think it makes you feel good, especially, I'm sure, of how patriotic the fans are in NASCAR to see this and to say, wow, I am so glad that you're driving. And it should make you a fan favorite as well in ways because of what you're supporting.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, like I said, everything's definitely been a positive reaction both from the fans and from all the people that have been involved with this, and they understand what we're trying to do and bring awareness to this so we can keep it going. You know, that's what it's all about. So we want to make sure that all the people that have given us a chance to do the things that we love to do, they're supported and their families are supported, and how everything works with military, and everybody loves to, everybody's been touched by the military in some way. Everybody in this country has, and, we're very proud to be able to support them and their efforts.
So I'm sure you hear tons of stories, Brian, when you're doing autograph sessions or after the race, and people come up to talk to you because of what you're talking about and thanking you, right, for having that on your car.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, like I said, almost, I would say probably 50% of the people I've done autographs with and had some kind of member of their family that has been in the military and has served and either are a part of it right now or were in the past. So it's a great organization to be a part of and help represent them. And people, they just love having the chance to see something that they can relate to out on the racetrack.
So tell me, first of all, how our listeners can get involved and help this organization. I think it's a fantastic one, and I think it's definitely needed because they've sacrificed their lives for us.
Us,
yes.
We have a text to support foundation, and you can text $10. We'll be charged to your bill, and it's text. You can text HONOR to 20222, and that will donate $10 to the foundation for Reads Across America, and we're hoping to help support them in their efforts and continue to support our military.
And that's so key, and I think that's so important. And what have you seen from the organization itself, how they're the way that they're able to raise money? I mean, just first of all, by your sponsor being involved in it, but I guess firsthand from experience learning about what they do all the time, it's just they must be really, really sacrificing a lot of time and effort, this charity, to make sure that they can get it to you said all over the country, wreaths to all those to those graves. What have you heard
Absolutely.
About how they do the grassroots movement to make sure it works?
They had over 600 different trucking companies that came up to Maine. More of Worcester and the family are from the Maine area, and they come up and the trucking companies come up and they pick up the wreath, take off to the mountain and different centers in the country. And they had well over 30,000 volunteers that came out and placed the wreaths on all the cemeteries. And, it's an incredible operation that they got there just for the sheer numbers of it all. And most of it's all within volunteers and, people who just want to be involved in it because of the aspect of what they're doing. So it's definitely a big operation. It was a lot bigger than anybody would really dream of. And I was really proud to be able to help support that for them. And, I think that we keep this going and everything across the country can be even bigger, and it's just it's an easy operation to be able to get behind because of what they're trying to do.
Is your sponsor hope to continue to support them for years to come? If they said that to you, saying this is such a great organization, we want to keep helping it grow? Is that what you've been
Absolutely.
Hearing?
Absolutely. But, in the end, we have to be able to have sponsorship dollars to be able to promote it, too. So that's what we're working on. We're hoping to run a few more races this year with TruckerFan.com, and and their chosen charity is Wreath Across America. So what we would be doing is, you know, coming up with sponsors that will help support Wreath Across America, let's sponsor the race car. And, you know, our primary spot on the race car would still be Wreath. And hopefully we can come up with a sponsorship to be able to continue to race and hopefully run a little more successful than we did this weekend at Daytona. But I believe that, you know, this was an isolated thing and we can get everything up and running and be out there and competing and getting the word out about trying to help everything.
So what are the next races coming up for you on your schedule after this, after Daytona? What's going on?
Well, we're pinpointing Talladega right now in the end of April, early May. And mostly we're trying to make sure that we go to races that we can compete at and get our name out there. And that's what we're looking to do. So right now we're pinpointing Talladega. And we'll kind of play it by ear after that. But, you know, we've got definitely some sponsorship interest there. And that's the first step. It takes a lot of money to put these race cars on the racetrack. So we have to be able to come up with everything we need to do and make sure everybody gets the amount of advertisement that they're looking for and you know how that we're trying to do this. But the tech campaign for Wreath Across America, that all goes directly to them. That has nothing to do with our actual sponsorship itself, but that's something to help support the Wreath people to be able to come out and do that.
And also, Brian, is this the first time you were going to race at Daytona, or have you raced there before?
I've actually I made that race in 2011 and got a chance to race with my brother, and he helped push me into the big race through the qualifying race, and that was a pretty neat thing. And you know, hopefully we get a chance to go back and do it again, because that was a wonderful experience. Daytona 500 is, you know, correlates to our Super Bowl of the season, even though it's at the start of the year. It's our biggest race, it's the biggest paying race, but it's also the biggest coverage race. We have many days that we're there at the racetrack and practices on TV, and we have a lot of things that go on around the Daytona area for this 2 weeks that we're here for Speed Week. So it's an amazing experience. I hope to get to do it again.
How crazy is it there? I mean, like the fans.
Oh my God. It is. It's very crazy. It's especially Daytona 500 day. You're sitting on pit road. You about can't move, and pit road's a pretty big area. If anybody's ever been to Daytona, they understand how big pit road is, but you can't even move around it. You're sitting shoulder to shoulder with everybody sitting on the infield. It's amazing they can even get out the people out of the way so we can put on a race as quick as they do. It's a big operation that they got and that they put on every year. They put on one heck of a show, and you know, we're working on our race cars to get more brand identity and trying to make everything more fan friendly and you know, if people can look at our cars and say, hey, that's something that I could drive every week. You know, we're trying to get a little closer to that through some of the new rules. And it's a great race to be a part of, and we definitely want to continue to be a part of it.
So what is, I guess, ultimately, when we're talking about becoming a driver in NASCAR, how difficult is it to get to the stage of Daytona? For my listeners out there that might be aspiring drivers or considering maybe having this as a career, how difficult is it to get to this level?
It's extremely difficult, you know, because you're relying on so many outside factors to be a part of this, not just being talented as a race car driver, but you have to have a lot of money to be able to get to that point. There's a lot of approval processes that you got to go through, and, you know, you have to start in the lower levels. If you're starting in the late models, then you have to be able to move up to, like, the ARCA series and then maybe to the Truck Series or the Nationwide Series until you can get to the Sprint Cup Series. It's just they really base everything off of experience level, and it's different than any other sport. Any other sport, if you're extremely talented, you could go up to the highest levels right away. And that's not the way that NASCAR works. You actually have to go through a stepping stone type of process. So, you know, it took me a few years to get through that process because, frankly, we just didn't have the money to get through it. So, but once we got through it, we got to the chance to still go out and run in the highest level in the Sprint Cup Series, and you know, it's definitely been a great feeling to be up there and racing with the best of the best.
Well, fantastic. So, Brian, where can our listeners find more information on you and learn more about the WAA and how they can get involved in it? We want to know more info on you and also the organization.
Well, both places
are the best to be on Twitter and Facebook. You know, social media, we're very much utilizing that, both for Reads Across America and with Brian Keselowski Motorsports. And, you know, that's probably definitely the best places to find our information. Reads Across America are over 40,000 likes now on their Facebook page and really pressing the Twitter and trying to get everything on there. And they've been very impressive in trying to get the word out, and they've been working hard at that. Both with the with our pages on Brian Keselowski Motorsports and my personal page on Facebook, we've had a lot of fans involvement, and you know, that'd be the best place to find us.
All right, fantastic. So, what's the Twitter handle to find information on WAA? What's their Twitter? Do you know?
It's Twitter handle on for Reads Across America is at Reads Across.
Okay. And do you have a Twitter as well, a personal one?
Yeah, I sure do, and it's at Keselowski Brian.
All right. Well, fantastic. It was great talking to you, and I hope next year you'll get to compete in Daytona, and I hope you have a great rest of the race year, and maybe we can come back and follow up in 3 months and find out what's going on with WAA and how you're doing on your race career. So thanks again for calling, man.
All right, sounds great. Thank you very much.
All right, take care. All right, you're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show, powered by Beach Lifestyle Celebrity Segment. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net, for more information. And I'm really excited, as I always say, and anytime you interview a celebrity, especially somebody that, you know, is on TV right now and has had and is on a really great show and is doing so many more great things. So I want to welcome the program Casey Taylor from Scandal. Casey, thanks for calling.
Well, hello. You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell our audience a little bit about your background as an actor, and then we'll get into some of the things you're helping others out with the Addiction Recovery Group and some other things. So go ahead and tell us a little bit. Yeah, go ahead.
You got it. Well, my acting background actually started with musical theater, and I did that for 4 or 5 years. I did that for a while. And so I sing, you know, kind of another fun fact about me. But I came down to Los Angeles about 2 years ago with a really great opportunity to get on the set of CSI New York. And then everything just kind of started happening, and I've been doing the L.A. television thing ever since. So it's kind of exciting.
So you went from a stage actor to the TV screen, and that's pretty interesting, right? Is that that's a different transition?
Yeah.
I've talked to so many people that are in the theater, and they say, well, you know, there's a lot more to it in certain aspects. Sometimes they say a lot more work because you don't have takes. You go straight on when you're okay. Acting in that way an opportunity like this. But it seems like they want people who are trained and can go ahead and take on a great role like that. So that's fantastic. And so you were telling me off air that you've done 4 episodes so far with Scandal, and you've been really pleased that you were part of this, part of the cast and being involved in this, right?
Yeah, it's really been a great experience. And it's great when you get on set and people are so kind to you. Even, you know, the major stars are so kind, even to like the little smaller actors. It's really a cool experience, and it really makes you feel like, you know, you can do this, and you can keep working hard and moving up the ladder.
What I was telling my wife, I said that every one of them was a small star at one point in time. So if I keep interviewing the people that are on the cusp of making it, I'll be saying, oh, but, and then creating relationships with them. That'll make my radio show even huge, because you'll be like, sure, Neil, I'll come on your show. I have this great reoccurring role now, or I'm a lead in this. And I remember from the day one. And so that's the cool thing about it, is all of them understand that at one point they were where you were at, just in that phase.
And even, yes, and I mean, from starting in the small town theaters to even, you know, if you do background work or stand-in work, which I've had my experience with, it's just an amazing thing to see how you can get so involved and just really make, you know, the networking connection and then just proving yourself. It's kind of a ride. You get a little bit driven, like an adrenaline rush with it.
Well, absolutely. And once you get to one point, you say, hey, I know I can go farther. I got some parts on Scandal. Now I'm going to look at, let's see what's happening in pilot season. Am I going to pick up the next big thing? You never know. But one thing I noticed that you do is you look back to your days out and really looking at others and how to help others. So tell us a little bit about this addiction recovery group you're involved in.
Well, it's pretty great. It's through my church, and it's been good to be a part of it, just because I myself dealt with, you know, girls really struggle with positive self-image and, you know, guys too. And just the way, like, what the industry is and the world, how we're always like, oh, hey, you know, you have to look a certain way and you've got to be a certain person. And it really causes people to fall into different addictions, whether it's like alcohol or an eating disorder or whatever it is. And it's, you know, myself, I dealt with an eating disorder, and it really opened my eyes to how hard it is to overcome these things. And so for me, I really try to help other people and inspire them and just get in there. And it helps me stay strong when I can get in there and help them and be their friend and show them that you can overcome anything that you put your mind to. And then you can still be successful after you've gone through something like that, because whatever you've struggled with in life, it doesn't have to define who you are. You know, you can shut the door on that and move forward, and every possibility is open. You know, so it's a great experience.
Well, absolutely, Casey. And what I wanted to ask you is, I guess, because of your I believe celebrity status, but I know you're humble enough to say, oh, come on now, Neil. But how do they feel of you going and helping these people, going to this addiction recovery group? The group must be just very happy that someone like you is doing this, right? Especially with the business schedule.
And it's really fun too, though, because you make friends, and these people, I mean, they obviously kind of put you on a pedestal and think, wow, she's working so hard. She does all this cool stuff. Oh, I saw her on Scandal last week. And for me, it's fun to show them that, you know, I'm just another person just like they are, working hard every day, dealing with the same struggles they deal with. And there's no reason for anyone to limit themselves just because, just because they have something that's a trial or a struggle that's standing in their way. You know, and it's fun to make the friends. And I probably have better friends with people. I mean, like my sponsor for the group, and then being able to sponsor other people. You know, you make those kind of lifelong connections that are never going to go away.
So, and this is another thing. So this is all going on in Hollywood, the addiction recovery group you're doing in L.A.?
I mean, it's out in the Northridge area, yeah. And, you know, it's like it's through my church, and so it kind of, I mean, you could find this little recovery program anywhere, you know, I mean, you can find help and support anywhere worldwide, so it's one of those things that I think is really important, that people are able to know that they can reach out and find other people that deal with the exact same thing that they deal with, and, you know, find strength by making those relationships and moving forward.
Being a great fitness person that you are as well, you help weight loss and different things like that. You talked about also one of the big things is negative body images, you really work with girls and trying to let them know that they don't have to feel bad about their body image, correct?
Yes, yes. And when I was in college, I actually majored my bachelor's degree is in health science and lifetime wellness. And then I also have a musical theater minor. So that's, you know, kind of my crazy background. But I worked for about 2.5 years working with women through weight loss program and being a counselor for them. Because I myself, when I was younger, I struggled with weight, and I actually was able to lose quite a bit of weight and get on a healthier lifestyle. Like every day I still work out. I love to go hiking. I love to just be active. And I helped a lot of women and some men kind of realize that, you know, it's about taking care of yourself and focusing on the fact that who you are and what you do with life really starts with yourself. Because if you want to be able to help other people and take care of your family and your friends, you have to take care of number one first. Because if you're not taking care of yourself, then you can't be effective. And that was one of the things that we really worked on. And I actually helped two girls lose enough weight that they were on the cover of People magazine at one point.
Wow.
Yeah, one of those issues where they do, you know, they've lost half their body size type of a thing.
That's fantastic. That was like,
yeah, that was back in 2007. So that was exciting, and I'm still friends with them. So.
And what you learn from doing the weight loss and working with and counseling is basically that you went through it too, and this was something that you were trying to work on while pursuing your acting career. But I think it also gave you an understanding that I'm really making a difference, because when you first start out trying to audition for roles and different things, you could feel down when you don't get that part, right? And then
oh, definitely.
So you need that that balance where you were helping others and seeing the success stories that kept you, I think, understanding, hey, they hit rock bottom and they were able to overcome. I could do the same in acting. Sometimes people are going to tell me no, but that fifth door might open up and then bam, I have a great opportunity, right? So that I think that helps in the process too.
Definitely. I mean, when you're acting, it can be, especially when you first start out, you can take those no's as such a personal thing, you know, as you go into an audition and then they don't ever call you back or they say, you know, you're not right for the part. You can take it so personally, and you have to really learn that that's not the point. You know, it's just a continual process. And it's like that way in anything in life. Like, feedback from people is just feedback. And you have to find what's right for you and move forward with that. Does that make sense?
Oh, it definitely makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So I definitely have learned watching, you know, I love finding strength from other people too, because when you do have a rough day and you are down on yourself, whether it's acting or whatever it is you're dealing with, it's nice to know that other people still deal with other problems too. And it's not the end of the world. It's like, get through this, you know, have your pity party for a minute and then move on to the next thing.
So tell me about, I guess, the process. And we were talking about off air, I might even talked about it now, pilot season. I'm hearing it from all these different celebrities. They talk about, oh, it's pilot season. I'm doing this, that, and the other, and all this. So how does it work? Basically, there's lots of auditions, or some of you get parts in pilots, and then we'll see if it ends up going through. What is this big thing where you guys are so swamped at this time of year?
Gosh, this time of year is crazy, and it's so different for everyone. Like, some people are just getting offered parts. Other people, you're out there. Like, for me, I'm out there working hard, making, like, the relationships with the casting directors, you know, going and visiting people and finding out from my agent what roles are available and just doing the groundwork to make sure that you're – I mean, it is such a job. It's like, you know, 80 hours a week just getting yourself out there. It's not an easy thing, and people think that with pilot season, you know, that you can just walk in and audition for anything, and it's not necessarily that way. You have to really, you know, be involved in a good acting school, have your manager, your agent, and just find out what's going on in the industry and be really informed, and then get yourself out there.
But what about when they're saying pilot season? Do they shoot the pilots once you audition, and then you don't know if it's going to be put out?
Yeah. Yeah, that actually, the pilot is technically like the first episode of a show. And so they'll shoot the pilot after they've auditioned and cast everybody, and then they send it to networks. Maybe it gets picked up, maybe it doesn't. That's why you'll see a lot of shows have maybe 3 or 4 episodes and then they're cut, or other shows, they film the 5 to 6 episodes and then they air them. And then if it's got a good audience, that's when it gets picked up into a real show with longevity. So, I mean, like with Scandal, they filmed just a half season for their first season, and they had a mid-season pickup with it. And then it had such great ratings, that's where it got its second season.
And you were part of the first season then, right? Or you?
I was actually. I was in one of the first episodes of the first season.
So you did.
It was called the campaign. Yeah, the trail.
Okay, cool. And then, so you did you do some in the second season as well? Or were you?
Yeah, actually, that's where I just did the one episode of the first season, and then they brought me back for season 2 to do a couple of featured spots, which was really fun.
And that, and you're hoping, you're keeping your fingers crossed that your character will continue, and that's the process.
Oh, yes. Hoping for the need for me, yes.
But I think it's going to help you with the, especially pilot season and all these other auditions now, that, hey, people know who you are. And then somebody's going to see that, and then that's the next step, right? Have you heard that from your agent, or you heard that from your friends in Hollywood? What have you spotted from that situation once you're recognized at these auditions and stuff?
It's been funny because I've had people actually come up to me and be like, you know, you look really familiar to me. And I'll, you know, they'll try to figure out how they know me. And then I'm like, well, do you watch the TV show Scandal? And they're like, yes, oh my gosh, yes, that's what it is. And it's funny to me. Because I'm like, wow, actually somebody saw me. Like when I did my first national commercial, and it was fun to get recognized from that. And then when you go back home, everyone you know, there you obviously have your fan base, and so your friends and people you run into, they're like, I saw you on this, or they Facebook it to you. So that it's fun.
Oh, I'm sure.
So we'll see how that rides out.
And are there any other projects coming up for you right now that you can say about that are not pilots that are?
I can say one thing. I'm involved in like an independent film right now, and that'll be shooting at the end of March. But I can't give you too much information on that. But yeah, so I got a couple things under my belt, and then I'm just working really hard auditioning. I've been actually auditioning every week, and you know, pilot season's here, so we'll see what happens.
So the question, when you're talking about the independent film, is it going to be filmed in L.A., the independent film?
Yeah, yes, and it's going to be involved in one of the independent film festivals toward the end of the year in November, December. So it'll be fun. I can let you know more about that later.
Oh, I want to bring you back next month, absolutely. You're going to be a welcome guest on the show, because you're educating me. These are questions, Casey, I have no idea about. I'm going to be out in L.A. in about that time in March one of my business partners, and I'm like, okay, I'm learning this whole game and understanding it, because I interview people on their foundations and charities, but I've kind of taken the celebrity role and said, I enjoy having these conversations, and we kind of make it more education related. Now you're teaching us about pilots, you're teaching us about auditions, because I know there's tons of people listening, Casey, that are dreaming, saying, well, I want my shot in Hollywood. And I'm telling you, I've talked to so many people that, you know, have decent roles, but it's a constant working till you get that huge break. It's a constant go, go, go till you find. And that's interesting what you said about the 80 hours a week thing. Oh my.
Yeah. I even work like a little part-time job as a waitress still, because I'm in the cusp of, you know, getting to my opportunity. And so you're constantly, you know, you got to keep the little job to pay the bills here and there in between shows. And it's one of those things where I'm constantly exhausted. I even have to schedule in time with my boyfriend just to make, you know, we'll sit down and do acting stuff together just to make time for each other. So, and he's great about that. So it is, it's really a go, 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 go. And people think that it's easy and someone gets lucky and just gets their break. But I guarantee every one of those people put in a lot of hours, a lot of time, a lot of heartache to get to where they are, and they deserve it.
I do that for my radio show, and that's how I'm able to get bigger and bigger guests, because I grow the network, we get more and more stations, and then the other thing that happens is I interview more and more celebrities, and then they tell each other, or you hear from the grapevine, oh, he's a great interview. He makes you feel so comfortable, like you're just sitting down having a cup of coffee. And that's what I try to bring out is and learn from you. And I appreciate it, Casey. So where can we find information on you so my listeners can go ahead and go to your website? Do you have a Twitter as well? So give us all the different places we can find info.
You can find me on IMDb under Casey Taylor, and the way you spell Casey is K-A-C-E-Y, and then Taylor T-A-Y-L-O-R. And then I also have CaseyTaylor.net is my official website. You can hear me sing on that and do some acting stuff on there. And then you can also find me at Casey Taylor, my fan page on Facebook.
And do you have a Twitter too?
No, I am so bad. I'm going to, you know what, I will do that today for you, and I will find you.
Just do that, just because then you'll get a following quickly, Casey. I'm always on it, so it's so easy.
Okay, I'll do it.
You and I need to get off air one time, talk, and I'll teach you how to use Twitter. It's awesome. It might
Let's
help
do
you.
Do that. There we go.
It might be, because especially with Scandal, come on now, when they re-air a show or it ends up on somewhere else. In another country, we got to work on that with you, Casey. We'll stay in touch. I have your personal number. I can call you anytime, right? That's not a problem, right?
Yes, yes, that is not a problem at all. And we will figure out how to do Twitter together. I'm excited.
All right. Hey, I'm a social media expert. My clout's 74, so so we'll work on
it. We'll build that fan base together. I love it.
All right, take care, Casey.
I'll even, blast it. You got it. Thank you so much.
All right, you too. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Education Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge bring humanity closer to truth. BBSRadio.com.
What to do? What's it do? What's it do?